Hello and welcome to the Bingeables podcast, a podcast for geeky TV junkies where we watch TV shows you just have to binge on. We're your hosts, Chinlin.
And Isaac.
And I'm Josh.
Welcome back, Josh. Welcome back, listeners. We are here to talk about the animated sci-fi Hulu series, Solar Opposites. I feel like we have a good amount to cover, so we'll just jump right into it.
Hey guys, if you're listening to this episode and you don't like spoilers, you should temporarily stop listening to this episode, go watch Solar Opposites, and then come back. Actually, just pause it. Don't even stop it. Just...
yeah, just hit the pause.
Set your phone down, talk to Alexa, get that shit running, and it'll take you approximately 2 hours and 40 minutes. Like, that's nothing. Maybe plug your phone in, maybe, and then come back and finish listening to this episode. Unless you like spoilers, if you're a weirdo like that, then keep listening. That's cool, too. We're all about consent here. Oh, wait, this isn't Beer with Buffy, is it? Never mind.
I mean, no, look, we're okay with consent here, too, so it's fine.
I would hope so. that's kink shaming. We don't kink shame here at Beer with Buffy, or over there at Beer with Buffy.
You haven't come across a podcast that's like, no, we are not on board with consent. Consent is for wimps and losers.
I bet they're out there, though.
I would be afraid if I heard a podcast that was advocating that, I might be like, you know, I should probably alert the authorities.
Well, yeah, you might need to get into the dark web to find it. Either that, you know, I think it's just nice to hear the words sometimes.
All right, so we can start with what we liked / what parts of the show worked for us. And Isaac, I'm going to let you go first.
Hooray! Okay, so what worked for me? What really worked for me was that the show wasn't trying to be on a message ever, which... I mean, it really, you know, that's going to depend on your mood, right? Like, what do you want to watch at the time? But for me, at the time, I wanted to watch something that was, you know, fun and easy. And this show is that. Like, the situations are funny. The non sequiturs are funny. But unlike, say, Rick and Morty, which I feel like explores a lot more of like what it means to be a sentient being, like, you know, they explore depression, genius, and alcoholism, and, you know, the interrelations.
Well, that they do.
And, you know, Solar Opposites doesn't do that at all. Solar Opposites is just and Josh mentioned this before, like, all the characters are two-dimensional, and I am actually like okay with that for this show. Like, I think that works well. And it makes me want to see more of the show because it's quite episodic for the most part, except for The Wall. But otherwise, like, the rest of it, like, it doesn't really kind of matter what order you watch them in.
Can I chime in really quick about
yeah.
the characters? They are two-dimensional. They're it's pretty simple and straightforward, like, who they are as characters. But they do complement each other very much, and I enjoy that for the A plot, B plot, yeah. So Terry and Corvo, obviously, they're solar opposites. Corvo is like...
Hey-o.
Roll
that's,
credits.
That's the title. She said it.
Corvo is... he's the leader, and Terry is the follower. Corvo's very serious. He's like, we gotta work on this ship. And then Terry's like, no, man, just go with the flow. Enjoy life here on Earth for a little bit. In fact, I really enjoy Terry's graphic t-shirts. Like, every time he wears those, I'm just like, oh, that is how I feel. I am with you, Terry.
It's like Roy from the IT Crowd. It's amazing, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh.
Exactly like the IT Crowd.
Well, he had like in every Butterbeer shirt, and then like the one that he was wearing in the finale said straight out of anime, and I was like, ah, I'm feeling it. I love this character. But I'm sorry, I took your moment, Isaac.
No, I'm good. You keep going.
I do like the characters. I think they worked they worked really well complementing each other, even though they are rather two-dimensional. Like, there's no character development going on here. It's not that kind of show.
Yeah, I mean, the one episode that, like, tries to pretend like there's character development is the season finale, and then you realize that that was all, like, a hologram story. So, there was no character development. What's his name? Yelmyelak was just coming in to, like, masturbate and then finds the three of them going, like, to realize that they were about to, they were trying to wake up Corvo from a dream they thought they were in. But other than that, like, yeah, there's, Jesse tries to make Yelmyelak, not treat people like things, in episode two, where she puts mind control devices on all his, known enemies, and then he takes her to the neo-Nazi bar, and, you know, they discover, well... She's like, I didn't know you were going to take me here. I didn't put mind control devices on them. We're probably going to die. And then because Yelmyelak doesn't have his ray guns, his suit has to take care of the Nazis. And he apologizes profusely to them as his suit, you know, wrecks them.
Graphically murders all of them gratuitously?
Yes.
That's how I handle my graphic violence. Animation style. I can't really do it with live action.
To be fair, they were neo-Nazis, so it was technically acceptable.
Right? Yeah. Like, it's okay. It's fine. But even then, he was apologizing and said, you know, try to be more tolerant next time.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
I take back my statement. There was some character development.
No. You don't need to take back your statement, because I think that those are the only two times that I can think of where somebody was actually trying to grow. Because Yelmyelak did kind of grow in that episode. He's like, I don't really care about humans, but I can see that you want me to, so I will try and be more judicious about the people that I shrink and put in the wall. Oh, guy in a red shirt! And grabs guy in the red shirt, whose name...
Yeah.
Whose name I think is Lindsay, but takes the name Tim in the wall.
Tim, yeah.
Yeah, he becomes the leader.
Yeah.
And then they say that they're going to be more judicious about collecting these people and sticking them in the wall for the rest of the show, but the population is obviously growing really fast in the wall,
right?
Throughout the series, so they're clearly not holding up to that promise at all.
Yeah, I think you're right, because so, there's easily hundreds of people in the wall.
Yes.
So, I mean, yeah, I don't know what infraction you have to make that, like, clears the line of being put in the wall, but it's probably not as high as you would want it to be. I mean, the AT&T executive said that all he did was fart in an elevator and blame it on the alien kid, and that's how he ended up there, so...
Oh, did he blame it on the alien
kid? Yeah, he said, so this was obviously episode 7, as the guy that was milking the mouse, and he's like, you know, back in my former life when I was CEO of AT&T, I thought everything was about money, but then it was that one day when I farted in an elevator and blamed it on the alien kid, and now I'm here.
Okay, I just didn't remember that one little detail where he had blamed it on the alien kid. I thought he just farted in an elevator, and that was that.
No, he blamed it on the alien kid, I'm pretty sure.
All right, well, that's extra funny.
Isaac, did you have anything else you wanted to touch on? What you liked or what worked for you?
One of the things that I liked about the show, and this is, like, really minor, but the opening credits that change every episode, where he's like, I'm Corvo, I'm the one that dropped the pupia. Do you see me? Earth sucks. And then he says something unique each episode. And I think that those little things are kind of funny to me. Like, he's like, people say they like old people, but they won't fuck them. How can you say you like them if you won't fuck them? I fuck old people all the time.
Humans are dumb. What happened to all the dinosaurs?
I did like that one. Yeah.
I like those. What else do I like? So I like the interaction that that Jesse and Yumulak have with the rest of the world, because for some reason they're still like treated like children. I mean, they're replicants, and I guess they are children, but I don't know, their interactions with people are more interesting to me and kind of funnier to me than what Corvo and Terry go through, except in maybe episode one, where Terry and Corvo think television is real. And so when they meet Fun Bucket, they're like, what the fuck is going on? This is just a kid in a costume. And then, you know, Terry is like, is Friends real? Is Frasier real? If Frasier isn't real, I'm going to kill myself. Yeah, so that's those are the things, like, that's the kind of stuff that works for me in this show. I mean, none of it's like super high concept. The other stuff, the fourth wall breaks, where they're like, when Corvo wants to take Terry to college, he's like, oh, that's gonna be an arc for you, learning not to take shortcuts, I'm sure. And then later on, Terry wants to do something, and Corvo's like, yeah, that's that arc rearing its ugly head again. Those sorts of things were like, where they seem to understand that they're in a TV show, except that, you know, they didn't understand that TV wasn't real. So maybe that's why they didn't understand that TV wasn't real, because they understood that they were in a TV show. That's probably way deeper than the creators and, you know, kind of meant for that to go, though, I'm sure, because this show is just a lot lighter.
If you're comparing it to, that feels like way, way more thought than they put into this, I think.
Yeah. The show is just way lighter if you're comparing it to Rick and Morty. So yeah. Which is why I like it, I think. For like right now, it's the kind of show that I want to watch. And it's not to say that I don't like Rick and Morty, because I do. But as far as, like, I don't know, rewatchability, I think I would, I'd watch like a Rick and Morty like twice or something and go, and, you know, get all the good nuggets out of it. But then, like, Solar Opposites, I can just kind of like have on. It's if I just need to unwind or something. This is what works for me in the show. I'm sorry, I've taken up so much time. Go on.
It is a very mentally relaxing show, I feel. So I understand where you're coming from, Isaac.
All right. I guess just in response to what Isaac was saying, at first when you were saying that the show is not very message heavy, like it's much lighter, I felt like I disagreed at first, but I think I changed my mind, and I'm only thinking that it was, each episode had a very clear theme. For instance,
right, like the gender difference episode or something, right?
The what difference?
The gender difference.
Gender differences, yeah. Gender differences, getting people to like you, being insecure about people liking you. I guess the theme for episode 7 being rebellion? I don't know. Episode 7 was its own entity.
Yeah,
really.
I think they were just going for like a a completely different, like, okay, well, here's a feature film sort of mockery of, I don't know, probably Escape from New York or something.
Right.
So that I think that's all they were going for there.
But yeah, I guess I would say that Jesse was probably my favorite character, because she felt the most genuine, and like she was really trying, and like she was just really a good person and not bogged down by all the other shit that the other characters were bogged down with. Like Yumulak just felt like a little sociopath to me, and I felt like, the whole show felt like Third Rock from the Sun meets The Odd Couple and looks and sounds a little bit like Rick and Morty.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it just felt like kind of a It's like, those aren't bad plots. Like, Third Rock from the Sun and The Odd Couple were both great shows. And why not mix them up and give it the overlay of Rick and Morty? And that kind of worked, I guess. It just felt a little too... I guess, formulaic. Like, Corvo's all business, and look, Terry just wants to screw around. Who knew? Who expected that to happen? But Jesse was the only one that I didn't feel like was really going to be super predictable each episode after episode. Also, I thought it was funny that the animation style made them kind of look like the big heads from Rocko's Modern Life. Mm. I don't know if you watched that show much, but with the way that Jesse and Terry's lips extrude off of their face, it was very much the big heads.
No, I haven't seen that show. Though there was a call out to that in the gender episode where Jesse was talking to her teacher at the end. Oh, that was what was that one called? That was called the Patricia device.
Oh yeah,
where her teacher was like, "I thought you were just gonna draw like Count Dooku's lightsaber or something and get an A. Like, what are you trying to do? What?
I didn't even know you were a girl. Yeah. Like, your lips don't even.
Yeah, your lips go beyond the boundary of your head. What am I supposed to do with that?
Here's something that really worked for the show, and I frankly wish there was more of the character Pupa. Pupa was adorable and hilarious.
Yes.
Oh, his shenanigans. Oh, Pupa is plot D.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, his little zany side adventures were amazing.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a bit thrown off at the part where he grabs a bird and murders it so that he can become the leader of this ring of crows or ravens or whatever they are, just so that he can escape from them. I was like, all right, so that was a little bit genius, but again, unnecessarily gruesome.
Oh, yeah, that freaked me out.
I think I was just in a very conservative mood last night or something. I had to stop watching TV about halfway through the lockdown because I just started getting really sensitive to everything. And I think I'm still coming off of that a little bit. Like, normally, it's very difficult to offend me. But this show was really pushing the boundaries.
This show was pushing your buttons, huh?
A little bit. And I mean, Rick and Morty finds this way to do gruesome, disgusting things, but they either have it make sure that it means something on a higher plane of intelligence or that it's funny enough that it doesn't bother you, or that, you know, the ends justify the means, whereas I feel like this show did not execute that well. It was just there because they're like, oh, people like cartoon violence, right? All the blood. The amount of times that they said fuck, I'm just like, I turned into an old Jewish man. I was like, do you really need to swear that much? Oi.
I enjoyed the swearing.
Yeah.
See, that's weird. I did not, when I listen to you guys, I don't take you for the type of people that are into swearing. In fact, when I hear, and you know me and Rex, like, we swear our faces off on Beer with Buffy. Mm-hmm. And then when I hear you guys swear, I'm like, it's like hearing my grandmother swear at church.
Do I really come off that way? Because that was not my intention.
I mean, we just don't swear that often on the, I mean, now that I think about it, I don't swear that much in, like, reality anymore either.
I swear when I'm angry. I swear a lot to my friends at work.
Right? It's just a fun journey getting to know new people, you know? Like, my last girlfriend, I get, it's hard to use the term ex-girlfriend. Sorry, I'm making this super heavy and all about me. You're welcome. That's why I'm here, right?
Yes, of course. For your...
Anyway, she had...
color commentary everybody, sadness. Bring it on.
Yeah, everybody would always never expect her to swear, but then she'd be around me all the time, and so she'd, you know, get really used to swearing and come back to me with stories of, people are so surprised when I swear around them, and I'm like, ha, you're welcome.
You're welcome.
So that's what Solar Opposites was like to me. It was like hearing my grandmother swear at church.
Okay. All right.
All right. I brought it full circle.
Good job. Good job.
That's because I'm a professional. Not really. I feel like the only boundary between professional and not professional is getting paid to do something. And yeah, we make about $40 a month on Beer with Buffy. So I technically, I'm a professional. I got this.
Yes, you are technically a professional. Unfortunately, we're still amateurs over here.
No, you guys are plenty professional. I wouldn't have said yes if you guys weren't.
Awesome. Thank you.
Aww. I knew you had your shit together. And I feel like you felt the same about me, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, because I mean, I haven't watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but I actually have listened to a few episodes of your show, and I go, this is nice. I kind of want to go watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but not enough to actually go do it yet.
Oh, see, I'm going to have to implore that you do, because listeners listening to the Bingeables podcast right now, Isaac and I had a lovely conversation wherein we convinced Chinlin to watch Star Trek The Next Generation just before we started recording this episode. And I'm gonna have to talk you into watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer now, because I'm gonna have to say I would pit Buffy the Vampire Slayer against Star Trek The Next Generation as the greatest show ever. I actually, now that I think about it, am having a hard time deciding.
I mean, I do like Sarah Michelle Gellar, so all right.
And you'll like everybody else in the cast just as much within one or two seasons.
Within one or two seasons.
except for Xander. You probably won't like Xander as much.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
He did not, his character did not age well. That's not saying anything about the actor. What's his name? Yeah. That one guy, Nicholas Brendan, the name we do not speak of. No, whatever. He's his own ordeal out there in left field. Regardless of that, his character did not age well. They bring it around later seasons, 4 and 5. He starts to get a little less super nice guy, creeper. But anyway, so back to Solar Opposites.
Right.
What's that show? What are we doing?
Solar Opposites.
I don't even know anymore.
Oh, okay, right.
Josh, did you have anything else you would like to add about what worked for you or what you liked?
So my favorite joke in the show, I would have to say, was the part where they're leaving the house because they have to go chase down the red Goobler, and they're setting up all the lasers, and Terry's like, oh, if we're leaving, I guess I should probably go seal up my secret doors. And Korvac is like, wait, what secret doors? Oh, it's fine. I only have a couple. And then he's going
the
around.
He's
going around sealing up all these doors. And one of them is a portal to a Wetzel's Pretzels. And Korvac is like, you know, that thing's just a money pit. It's and the guy down there is like, Free pretzel day is coming up. It shuts the door. That was one of like three spots that made me laugh. And the next part, I don't want to steal your thunder, Chinlin, because I know that you want to talk about this part. Maybe I'll just wait until after you talk about this part, but I know you want to talk about Molly the Mouse.
Oh, okay. I'll take it over on the C-plot, a.k.a. the wall.
Yeah.
Where we have basically a new society that's very reminiscent of, I guess, a third world country.
Escape from New York.
where everyone is, you know, hunting for valuables and resources and, you know, killing each other.
I would have to say it's the freshest take on a post-apocalyptic society that I have seen to this day.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, because they're all shrunk down and, like, using, like, regular I think it's a really good take.
It was a mindfuck because the only resources available to them are what Jesse puts down the chute and what they had in their pockets when they came in. And I'm like, that's not sustainable. And it made no sense logistically how they're thriving in there like they are, but it was still engaging, you know?
We've got chapstick for days.
For days. Yeah. Years.
So much chapstick, no insulin. And I actually normally hate post-apocalyptic settings. Like, I normally, like, find fault with the premise because I feel like humans are actually pretty good at being able to adapt to a situation. And so, like, I find it difficult that a once technological society would somehow, like, devolve into nothingness. Like, there would certainly always be pockets of technology somewhere because, like, it's not that hard to start setting up a community and, like, that's how the Middle Ages was. Like, we'll just build walls around our fortress and, you know, we'll make
do. You tell
do.
That
like,
to Rick Grimes, Isaac.
I'm sorry, what'd you say there?
I said, you tell that to Rick Grimes, that it's not that hard to set up a society. I don't know if you've seen The Walking Dead, obviously.
I don't, actually. That's one of the few popular shows that I have not seen.
Oh, okay.
We'll save that tangent for off mic.
Okay, then.
The whole stuff with the wall, that was the only thing that was really building throughout the 8 episodes that was not episodic. And I found it very unexpected but delightful. I enjoyed watching it. The only thing I have to say is that I cannot rewatch Molly the Mouse. I can't rewatch her death scene in the 7th episode.
My God. I'm sorry. Go on.
Ugh.
Just agree.
Are you about to say something snarky to me, Josh?
No, I was agreeing. That was an emphatic agreement.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I must have misheard that. but yeah, no, I got
I have resting
really
sarcastic
teary.
Voice.
I got really teary when the mouse died. And after the credits rolled and I was, you know, getting ready for bed, I kept thinking about it and I started crying because I don't know how often you listen, but sometimes I'll bring up like our hamster on the podcast.
Oh my God.
We have two hamsters. My first hamster, she's still with us, but she is very old in terms of hamster years. She's 2 years old, which is really old for a hamster. And, like, she could die, like, any day now. Like, hamsters can just drop dead, and it makes me so sad. So,
sure.
Because of that, like, I can't rewatch that death scene. It's just too sad for me.
I completely agree. And, it, you know, you don't have to be, you don't have to be a rodent pet owner to identify or to relate to that scene. I mean, it reminded me a lot of, I think it was The Neverending Story where Atreyu's horse gets stuck in the quicksand and he has to slowly watch his head go under. And like that movie ruined so many childhoods because that was just so traumatic because, you know, you don't have to be a horse owner to identify with that. I mean, anybody who isn't a sociopath and has ever had a cat or a dog or known somebody who has a cat and a dog that they enjoyed the company of or playing with can say, oh my God, that is fucking traumatic. And so I am completely on board with you where that scene did in fact make me cry. And, you know, I've got cats and I love my cats more than I love people, probably. And so that was probably the one and only scene that I thought they pulled off well. And here's why it pisses me off so much. Because the one relationship that they took any time in really cultivating to get us to care about, they were only doing it to get a cheap cry out of us. And that just fucking pissed me off. this show. Oh my God, this show. This is... The lockdown with coronavirus has been a very traumatic experience for me. A friend of mine cut me off permanently. My girlfriend broke up with me. This is Josh makes everything sad and about him moment again. And I've been isolated from all my friends and spending too much time at home with my mom, which is not healthy for me. I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that. And I didn't need that. I didn't need that scene, but I am right there with you. And it was still a great moment for television because as much as I hated it for my own personal reasons, they pulled it off. And, you know, their reasons are their reasons, and we have to deal with art as it's given to us. We don't get to go back and start up a big internet movement and raise funds and tell Justin Roiland that he has to change it because we didn't like it. Fuck that. You know, the fact that I didn't like it doesn't mean it wasn't good. So, right there with you. That was probably the defining moment of this series for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of the only times for the show that I, like, felt real emotional connection. Like, yeah, I definitely got teary in that scene. Upon rewatching, it's not quite as effective. Maybe because you know that it's coming. It's still kind of sad, but it's not. I don't feel like it's as sad on a rewatch. But yeah, I'm with you guys. I liked the wall plot. I feel like I know that. The first episode I saw, I think, was episode 3, where the wall was already in existence. So.
Oh, yeah. I started without you, and you were like, what are you watching?
Yeah. So I immediately, like, that was kind of the plot line I was more curious about, because it was like, oh, yeah, what's going on? There's this society in this wall that they have. What's going on with that? And I was glad to see that they really took some time to, like, turn that into a real, I don't know, arc or something. But I don't know why I said but. I'm agreeing with you guys. I don't have a but. I'm just not.
You don't have a but?
Nope. I just have a flat piece of skin.
I was going to say, I wouldn't know. Picks or it didn't happen.
Just one more comment about the wall, or actually Molly in particular. It takes a lot for me to cry watching TV and movies. It takes a lot for me to cry. But yeah, that one did it. They really pulled it off.
Frankly, watching any living creature drown would make me cry, fake or real. So I still think it was cheap, but it definitely was cry-worthy regardless.
So we're going to move on to comparing Solar Opposites to Rick and Morty. I know y'all have brought it up a little bit in the preview and just now in this recording. Do you think the show is better or worse than Rick and Morty? Any analysis that you have there?
So better or worse is a value judgment, whereas I would say it's different.
different. Yes, and for sure.
It's definitely different, and different in a way that I like for the way that I'm watching TV right now. Does that, I mean, so yeah, it's not, I wouldn't say that it's better than Rick and Morty, but right now I've enjoyed the episodes more than like going back to rewatch Rick and Morty episodes. But for the reasons that I mentioned earlier, like it's lighter, it's less cerebral.
I think, because I'm not like super into Rick and Morty, I think Solar Opposites works really well for a different audience. Because Rick and Morty wasn't necessarily my cup of tea, even though I do enjoy sci-fi shows. I lost my train of thought. I forgot where I was going with that, but I enjoy this show, and I don't really see myself watching anymore Rick and Morty.
Oh, see, I'll definitely continue watching Rick and Morty. What about you, Josh? I'm sure you feel the opposite way.
I'm sure you guys know my opinion already. I think Rick and Morty is by far the superior show. I think it might boil down to the difference between Rick and Morty being more serial versus episodic. Like, you figure out about halfway through the first season that there's not just a season arc. Like there's always a good episode arc, but there's also a season arc, and there's character growth, and there's a series arc that will keep me coming back until they wrap everything up, or at the very least until, because the show raises the stakes every time you think that, okay, this is everything that's going on. Shit just gets crazier somehow. Like the first episode where I really felt that was when, and I'm talking about Rick and Morty, not Solar Opposites. So spoiler alert for Rick and Morty, if you have not seen Rick and Morty. But season one, when Rick and Morty have to skip universes to find a new universe to live in because they've destroyed their previous one. And then
Cronenberged it up.
They Cronenberged it, yes. And then that becomes the reality that they live in for the rest of the show. And then there's the panel of Ricks and all these other Ricks in these alternate dimensions. And then we start getting these background plot lines, and it's real character development and real diving into psychology of each character, like Summer and the mother and Jerry. I can't remember the mother's name off the top of my head. Beth.
Yeah, Beth.
And oh my, I cannot stop thinking about the little robot that he built and its only purpose in life is to pass butter.
You pass the butter.
That poor little fucking robot is my soulmate. And I just want to adopt him and, you know, let him do art or something and just fund his existence to do more than pass the butter, because that's how I feel. And so I guess, yeah, like I said, I feel like Rick and Morty is much more cerebral, and I like that better. So like you said originally, I think it was Isaac, you that said that it's more of a judgment call. So I can't disagree with that. I can't argue with that. Or it's a value difference. So whether or not, so if you value more cerebral and a serial arcing plot, if that's what you're looking for in TV, Rick and Morty is by far the superior show. Solar Opposites has things to offer, but it's very episodic. Like you were saying, you don't necessarily have to watch them in order to get pretty much everything out of it that the show has to offer. The only thing that I would disagree on that with is the people in the wall.
Right, of course. Like, that is a serial story.
That is a serial story that progresses each episode. Everything else for all the other characters, Terry, Korvac, Jesse, and Yumulak, they all go back to square one at the end of each episode, which is a signature of an episodic show. And that just feels like a cop-out to me every time. Like, you know, I grew up watching sitcoms where you never got to watch anything in order because you were watching reruns most of the time, and you were lucky if you ever caught a live airing anyway. So to this day, I still haven't seen all of Seinfeld, and it's only recently occurred to me that, wait, I could watch all of Seinfeld. There are still episodes I haven't seen, and I used to love that show, but now I kind of think Jerry Seinfeld is an arrogant prick because I watched Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, and you really get to know him as a person, and he's not a nice person at all. He's really he's really just kind of mean-spirited. Like, he's all about whatever, we don't need a
tangent. We don't need to turn this into a rip on Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah. He's one that I definitely believe his lawyers would chase me down if he felt like it. I would never say anything that wasn't true, and I don't think I would ever say anything that he actually disagrees with. He'd be like, you know, that's probably a good analysis, man. I can see how people would think I'm being rude.
We are going to move on into the last portion of the episode. We're going to talk about our theories or predictions for season two. And we'll start with Isaac.
Oh, okay. So I'll make up some stuff. I think that for season two, they are going to essentially do the same thing as season one. It's going to be a bunch of
shenanigans,
just episodic shenanigans that, you know, are not linked by an overarching story. I think that the thing at the end of at the end of season one with the pupa turning a different color is either A, going to be a red herring, or B, going to be a running gag that he just changes a different color at the end of every season. I do have a little bit of a question about, now, like, it came up while we were recording this, like, why does Corvo need to repair the ship if the pupa is going to terraform the planet?
Oh, you know, I didn't even think of that. That is a good point.
Like, what's the point?
I didn't think about that, and I watched the show twice.
Huh. Yeah, so, I don't know. But as far as, like, what the characters, I don't think they're going to do anything super different. I did enjoy the cameo of, I only know him as Rafi. The guy that played Rafi on The League, he was also Janet's boyfriend on The Good
Place.
The
actor's name is Jason Mantzoukas.
Enjoy his cameo, but he kind of plays, I don't know, I feel like he plays the same character almost everywhere. Always the raucous guy that nobody wants to have around.
I really enjoyed Vanbo. I would like to see more Vanbo, but since that was all simulation, I don't know how we're going to see Vanbo.
Oh, right, and that reminds me, Josh mentioned the time travel. I think they didn't actually do any time travel because it was simulated. I don't think they'll ever do any actual time travel. For probably the same reasons they don't do any time travel in Rick and Morty. Like, it gets convoluted quickly and just better to avoid it.
I don't think this show would have any qualms with getting convoluted. And I think they could easily make the time travel thing not take place in a simulation, and, you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all, but this is your prediction, so I'll step back.
Yeah, I don't think they're gonna do time travel. They may prove me wrong, but I don't think they will. I think I don't see any crazy twists or anything. I think that the pupa is essentially gonna just be the thing that they use to try and trick the audience into thinking something new is going to happen, and then nothing new will ever happen until the show actually ends, and the pupa will either terraform the planet or it won't. And it'll be I don't want to compare it to the last episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation, but I think it will be like that, and like everything will be settled, but you'll understand that there are still more adventures to be had in the future.
I had a stupid prediction that I no longer agree with, but I was gonna say maybe the pupa actually evolves into its true form and wants to destroy Earth, and Corvo and Terry and them don't want to let it happen. But it's more, that's too predictable, and I no longer think that they're gonna go that route. So, thus, I don't actually have a prediction. But I think what Isaac predicts is probably most likely what they'll actually do. And I do want to stick around for season 2 when it comes out next year, I assume.
Yeah. I definitely think that the pupa turning orange was a red herring. And that's just based on when Corvo did find his wallet and the information card about the pupa. It said, if your pupa turns orange, he probably ate something orange. So I'm pretty sure that's all that is.
And the it turns silver at the end.
Oh, does he?
That's not silver. That's purple.
Oh, purple. Sure. Whatever. It turned a different color.
Same
color. You think
color.
Rick's hair is gray, and I keep telling you it's blue.
It is blue.
We cosplayed as Rick and Morty to a convention once here in Dallas. And
oh, that's great.
I wanted to get him a blue Rick wig, and he was like, Rick's hair is gray, not blue. And I was like, it's obviously blue in the animation. And now you think the pupa was silver? It was purple.
Okay, he was purple. I still contend that Rick's hair is gray. It's just, you know, one of those darker grays.
Josh, listeners. Josh, what color do you think Rick's hair is?
I think you're both right. It is a grayish blue hue.
Yeah.
Just the safe answer. He doesn't want to pick.
No, because it's grayish blue.
It's not the safe answer. My eyes are gray blue. Like these two things are not mutually exclusive.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that it's gray, but it's got a tint of blue to it. But I think that's just the animation style. Like, I think if you were to meet Rick in real life, it would be just like a darkish gray.
I think it has a bluish hue because it fits better with the color palette, but it is intended to depict gray hair. How's that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's where I'm coming from.
Okay, fine. But you said gray. You got a gray wig.
No, to be fair, I did get essentially what amounts to a white wig, but yeah.
But yeah, I don't think they're trying to imply that he's a blue hair. Hard air quotes there.
I don't think that's their intention either.
Yeah. Anyway.
What about you? What do you think is going to happen with the show? I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, that's okay. Like I said, I think that was a red herring with the pupa turning colors, even the purple, whatever. I stopped caring about whether or not anything makes sense in this show anymore. And I think they would be, you know, just from a backseat writing standpoint here, I think they'd be shooting themselves in the foot if they let the pupa evolve too early. Or they could let him evolve, make one episode out of it, and then, you know, make it a dud of an ordeal that they don't have hovering over them anymore. And I guess it's not entirely mutually exclusive that Korvac could want to still fix the ship, even though that the pupa is supposed to overtake the planet, because they were supposed to find an uninhabited planet. So
that's true. So maybe he wants to fix it so that they can take the pupa to it and, you know, release it on that planet.
Yes, because even though he hates humanity, it might still be against their utopian empire's like prime directive or something to destroy sentient life. They don't disagree that it is sentient life. Like Korvac at least gives humans that much credit. So I don't think they are going to let the pupa overtake the planet Earth, especially because they make it sound like the pupa would also destroy them in the process.
Right.
And they seem to be scared of that as well. So at the very least, they need to fix the ship so that they can leave while the pupa does its job when it does take its true form. But mainly, yeah, I think it's just going to be more episodic whatever.
Oh, that reminds me, speaking of episodic whatever, and this is one of the things that I wanted to mention that I thought was funny. I'm not sure what Hulu's affiliations are, but the show seems to be affiliated with Yum Brands because they had KFC for dinner at the end of episode one. Then Terry comes in with Taco Bell, which they don't specifically say is Taco Bell, but he delivers almost every single one of their like taglines. He's like, I can't remember. He's like, I was out living Moss or something. Anyway. And then I think
the
also
the fourth wall breaks with Hulu. That's obvious product placement.
Yes.
It's like, oh, what are you doing? I was watching my Hulu Vizu.
Yeah. If you cancel my Hulu account, how am I going to find out what happens on the Hulu production of? And I forget the name of the movie, but.
Yeah, the product placement was absolutely out of control and just rife in this show. It's kind of one of those things that I found jarring because I've seen product placement done in clever ways that actually adds to the show. Like, think about Stranger Things. Have you seen Stranger Things?
Only like the first half of the first season.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember why I stopped watching, but it was like back when only season one was out.
Okay. Also, that's another amazing show that I would highly recommend you get back to, even though it is like really overinflated with popularity now. It's still really good. But somewhere in the second season, they do a KFC product placement, and they worked it in so very nice that I didn't even realize it was product placement until I thought about it later.
Oh, see, I thought they were trying to be over the top in this show, like.
I knew they were being over the top, and I just enjoyed it. But then again, out of the three of us, I'm probably the most easily amused person.
Yeah, they were trying to be over the top, and I just didn't feel like it was clever. I like things clever. Maybe I just have very high, too high a standards. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe for this show, anyway.
To each their own.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, that wraps up our discussion of Solar Opposites on Hulu.
Woot woot.
Josh, thank you so much for coming on again. It's been a real pleasure. We appreciate you taking the time to do this. And please feel free to repeat your social media handles.
Yeah, thank you so much for asking me to be on the show. I've had an excellent time today, and I hope you did as well. Anybody who wants to check out my show, it's called Beer with Buffy. You can find us on Twitter at Beer with Buffy. I didn't mention earlier, but I remembered that we have a voicemail phone number that you can call. It's 269-743-0783. You can find me and Rex. That's my co-host on Patreon at patreon.beerwithbuffy.com. We have a merchandise store at store.beerwithbuffy.com. And you can always email us at beerwithbuffy@gmail.com and all that good stuff. We're also on Facebook. Just search Beer with Buffy and you'll find our Facebook page. And that's all our social media. Just Beer with Buffy, Beer with Buffy, Beer with Buffy.
Y'all are legit.
I'm totally going to call that number and leave you a message.
Please do.
Thanks for listening to the Bingeables podcast.
Leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you enjoy listening to our podcast, please consider giving us your support on Patreon for as little as $1 a month. Just visit us on patreon.com/bingeablespod. That's patreon.com/BINGEABLESPOD.
You can connect with us on Twitter at BingeablesPod, or you can email us at bingeablespod@gmail.com.
Until next time.
The Bingeables Podcast is produced by patron Raymond G.
And the music you're listening to is Shaving Mirror by Kevin McLeod.